Hello and welcome to season 5 of the Civic Tech in Africa podcast. We are back after what I imagine has felt like a very long break for our listeners. I can assure you it's all been for good reason. We are back with very high quality shows this season, and we hope you will enjoy and learn from our guests throughout this season. You join us today as we introduce some new features for the podcast. One of those, of course, is that the podcast is now available on video format. We welcome all of you who are watching us on our YouTube channel today. If you're listening on audio format and would like to watch the podcast, please visit the Civic Tech Innovation Network's YouTube channel to watch all future episodes. In today's episode, at the very last segment, we will be introducing a new feature we like to call What in the Civic Tech? Throughout the season, we will be exploring ideas and concepts from the civic tech world, as well as events and opportunities in the civic tech space from the African continent. So stay tuned for that segment coming up on today's show. And speaking of today's show, I'd like to introduce today's first guest. But first, let's take a short break and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back. It is 2024 and it is also election season in most parts of the African continent. This year, we are seeing many African countries take part in national elections. And as a result, there are many discussions about the resilience of African democracies, particularly considering the effects of digital technologies on the processes and outcomes of these elections. In today's episode, we're talking about the possibility of moving Africa's election process from a paper-based voting system to an electronic voting system. This is a subject that was widely talked about during the COVID-19 pandemic, but I'd like to argue that it hasn't had enough light shown on it ever since. In today's episode, we revisit this subject and explore the possibilities and the somewhat apparent challenges that we may need to overcome if we're to seriously consider e-voting. I'm joined today by Dr. Maxwell Masego, a postdoc fellow at the Tyrisha Center based at the Wits School of Governance in Johannesburg. His research primarily focuses on media and governance, particularly in areas of democracy, digitalization in the public sector, protests, and citizen participation. Hi, Maxwell.
Hi, Nati, and hi, everyone.
Thank you so much for joining us in today's episode. You've recently written about the subject that we sort of introduced in the intro. You wrote for the Mail and Guardian, and you're specifically talking about your sort of focus on South Africa. But obviously, this is an African podcast, and I wanted us to widen the discussion to the rest of the continent and talk about the readiness of the African continent for, you know, e-voting, for electronic voting. And I sort of hinted at sort of the genesis of this discussion on the African continent. And I imagine in other parts of the world as well, this has been a thought for some people. Can we talk a little bit about why this discussion about electronic voting started in Africa and perhaps around the world? What was the genesis of this conversation?
I think just to get a clear understanding of what we're talking about, it only makes sense to define what it is when we refer to electronic voting. In simple terms, we're just talking about the use of electronic systems to cast and count votes. As you said, the discussion is not new in its entirety in Africa and around the world. I mean, from an African perspective, for instance, the discussion was started in 2004 in Namibia. And ultimately, Namibia became the first country in Southern Africa to conduct electronic voting in 2014. So there's a discussion that's been ongoing, and it's been ongoing for many reasons. Some of those concerns by electoral bodies has been the declining state of democracy on the continent. We see a lot of that happening in a lot of African countries in sub-Saharan Africa. The element of distrust in government systems, the element of distrust in government leaders, you know, people not trusting that they will really get what they want from their leaders. It's also been an issue around countries facing challenges in vote counting and the capturing of results, leading to delayed announcement of the election's outcome. So yeah, it has been a discussion that's been going on for a while. And just given these concerns, people now have been looking for other ways to try and speed up things, as it were. And that's where we're at the moment.
And I think you've already hinted at my next question around what the benefits of this are for, especially in the African context. Could you sort of expand on that a little bit?
I mean, I've mentioned issues around declining democracy, issues around a dwindling trust in government systems, a dwindling trust in leaders, state organizations not performing well even. You've got young people also thinking that they cannot identify with the leaders of the day. And hence they don't feel involved in the election system. It doesn't necessarily mean that they don't want to, but they also just feel that given the way the electoral systems are sort of shaped up or made up at the moment, they are not inclusive to them. And it's also issues of, you know, just general lack of participation in political systems in countries around the world, with Africa bearing the brunt of a lot of these challenges. And as you've seen as well, you touched on effects of the COVID-19 pandemic. They sort of brought about new ways of conducting business, which then means that information technologies and elections themselves have not been spared.
I think in discussing whether or not we're ready for it, it'd be very nice to reflect on what other people have done right across the world and whether or not there are examples. And you sort of stated earlier that Namibia was one of the first African countries to start the electronic voting process. Do you have any other examples across the world that we can learn from? And are they doing it well? And what challenges emanate from adopting this voting process?
You know, Nati, electronic voting varies country by country. We're talking about different countries using different electronic systems. But ultimately, the goal is one, is to speed up the counting process, is to be able to audit the elections results where they can. So several countries have been experimenting with this system. And I know that Estonia is probably the only country around the world that is relying on the system 100%. In 2004, around there, if I'm not mistaken, they started piloting the system in their local government elections. And then subsequently, in 2007, it was then adopted, you know, as part of parliamentary elections. But it doesn't mean that there weren't problems there. But you also have other countries, your Australia's, the US, your France, Canada's, that also use the systems, but not 100%. They sort of use them in different states. They sort of use them partially. So I think the trend that we're starting to see is some of these countries have adopted the systems, but not sort of entirely as one would expect, because then there are still, of course, some obvious challenges that come with it. I mean, if you can think about some of the obvious things, I don't know if you know about the alleged Russian influence in election systems. Mm-hmm. That has been one of the concerns. So then it brings into question issues of security threats. Can you really trust the system? Is there human interference? How then do you deal with those issues, the issues of security concerns? But we've also seen, you know, examples that have happened in Kenya as well, the Cambridge Analytica scandal, which has been happening in the US. There are also reports of it happening in Kenya as well. So yeah, it's quite an elaborate sort of amount of issues that have been happening as well.
Thinking about Estonia as a country, the first example you made there about Estonia as a country being a country of a million people. And you think about on the African continent, a lot of large countries, a lot of people, and a lot of them obviously not having the tools, right? Or not particularly digital literate, for instance. Would e-voting be a challenge for the African continent where especially your digital divide is quite big? I mean, would we need a dual process? So you hinted at the fact that other countries aren't obviously doing this e-voting process by itself. They have other things going on, right? The ballot paper based thing still going on with the electronic voting happening at the same time. Would that be something to think about for the African continent?
Yeah, you know, your question is twofold. There's a lot of challenges that are happening in Africa. And also we'll just get into the whole issue about the widening digital divide that's happening on the continent. But in terms of the challenges, you know, the World Bank has said this, that there's a rising poverty and inequality on the African continent. This then is in effect affecting, you know, the use of technology in areas. You do have countries that are doing better than others. I'll take South Africa, I'll take Kenya, I'll take Nigeria, I'll take, I don't know, Botswana. You know, those internet penetration is much better compared to other countries. But then you do have countries that are also obviously, you know, performing dismally, where now so-called authoritarian regimes are trying to block access to the internet, for instance. So yeah, rising poverty, inequality is an issue in Africa. And this, by the way, doesn't just happen in rural areas. It happens in urban areas as well. You've got people living in urban areas. They may not necessarily be able to access this kind of infrastructure. So therefore, Africa, you know, a lot of countries are still lagging behind in terms of infrastructure and technology, although you still have some of these countries that have a high internet penetration. You know, you've got challenges of issues of lack of ICT skills, because I think it's important to remember that when we talk about rolling out, you know, electronic voting, it's not just about rolling out the technology, but it's also having the right attitude. Do our leaders have the right attitude to say, we believe in the system, this is what we should be doing, this is where the rest of the world is going? So that right attitude, that political will is also important, as are the skills, equipping people to be able to deal with the technology, equipping people to be able to handle the large amounts of data that you anticipate, you know?
Right.
So yeah, it's those kind of issues. I've mentioned issues of political will and, you know, some leaders refusing to accept the Internet of Things, that the world has moved beyond what we know. The world has moved beyond the use of paper. You know, people are now using for faster and more effective ways to communicate. A lot of these countries, the challenges are, you know, they refer to the lack of digital policies, you know, policies to guide the use of technology. Because in many instances, you see countries just importing technology for the sake of importing technology. But do they know how to use it? Is that technology adequate to resolve internal problems even?
Right.
So often that then is one of the key issues. You know, I've mentioned the issue of handling data. African countries sort of equipped to handle large amounts of data, you know, because then this then makes them their systems vulnerable to hacking, for instance. And I won't even mention the issue of budgets, because it also means if there's political will, then it also means leaders must be able to, or rather be prepared to spend to ensure that the systems are actually functioning optimally.
I think if you sort of hinted at my next question around, you know, fixing the very elementary things first before adopting, you know, new tech, for instance. And I think one of the challenges that we have on the African continent is that participation is a real issue, right? Particularly for young people. And you've written for the Mail and Guardian that you think that, you know, adopting electronic voting might be a great way to resolve the issue of apathy. So I want to expand on that. And so why you think that's possible if we haven't really fixed from a community level participation in matters of governance? Any thoughts on why you think that will solve the problem?
Interestingly, research, including my research, has also found that, for instance, I'll use the South African example, where in 2021, during our local government elections, we piloted the use of voter management devices to help in capturing the data of voters at voting stations. This was a pilot, you know, and obviously IEC officials were hoping that it was going to, in part, address the issue of low voter turnouts, voter apathy, but it didn't. To an extent, the system did fail. I think there was about 100,000 people that were not able to take part in the elections because the system collapsed. Not total collapse, but there were reports of those devices not working in certain voter stations for whatever reason. You know, so those people effectively did not take part in the elections. But when they were looking at it in totality of what has been happening around the country, they found that the system did well. Because one can argue that given the challenges of COVID in 2021, did they have enough time, for instance, to really attend to every problem that was there? But given the challenges that was there and the fact that the integrity of the election had to be protected, there was therefore a conclusion that the system actually did well. But did it really now address the issue of voter apathy? It didn't, because, you know, the statistics show that the voter turnout was still low. So then it tells you, and then it makes you question to say, what role can research play in trying to probe what are the real reasons that people are perhaps not taking part in elections? Is it just an issue of, I don't know who to vote for? I'm really just not interested because I don't feel there's anybody I like here, or I feel nobody actually listens to my problem. You know what I mean? So I think we also then need to look beyond that.
Right.
But also just based on the information that we know about how young people behave these days and about the issues of internet penetration in the country, which is quite high, then one is also saying that here is a tool that can be used by others that are able to. Hence now we get into this recommendation of, I think it's a system that we can use together with this traditional system that we have where people are using ballot papers. One sort of argues for the future. Are we there yet in terms of adopting it, electronic voting 100%? I really don't think so. You know, given the challenges that we have, some of them you've hinted on, the digital divide, the widening inequality, it's going to take a while. But obviously then these are policy issues that need to be addressed at a policy level, because then it also means there has to be budgets to then make sure that we have adequate infrastructure to service all areas of the country. But then obviously then the bigger argument becomes South Africa cannot sleep on this. This is what the rest of the world is doing, where the rest of the world is going. There are new opportunities to be explored within that space while also still tackling our own internal domestic issues.
I think what's not clear for me, I think so in the article that you wrote, is whether or not your conclusion is we are ready or not, particularly South Africa, if it's ready. And we'll start there. Is South Africa ready, according to you? And based on sort of the African continent's needs and challenges, is the African continent ready? And perhaps you can put a percentage there to say the African continent is ready at 10% or is South Africa's ready at 10%? So I don't know. So in conclusion, we'll start with, is South Africa ready? And then move to the rest of the continent. Because you also mentioned that like other countries in the African continent are more developed than others and could be more ready than others.
Yeah.
And given those facts, do you think that the rest of the African continent is ready? And what percentage can you assign to that?
Is South Africa ready? I wouldn't like to put my head on the block by assigning a percentage. But I'll say, just based on the attitudes that we see and based on what is being said out there by election officials, what is being said by parliament, I think we are ready. You know, because we're already having this conversation. We've already adopted the partial use of technological devices in the use of our elections. And I mean, as I know, VMDs are going to be used as well in the 2024 election as well. So I think in that sense, you can already see attitudes are changing. People are talking about it. We are ready.
Right.
But then they are saying that we are not entirely ready in the sense that electronic voting is not just the responsibility of the IEC alone. There has to be wider public consultation to get a buy-in. Because you still have some political parties that still say, we're still not convinced how you're going to deal with the issue of auditing. We're still not convinced of how you're going to deal with the issue of ensuring security, ensuring that no fraud takes place. So it means everybody needs to be involved. Members of the public have to be involved so that people submit their concerns and then these are dealt with. In fact, the IEC, I think in 2020, if I'm not mistaken, they did make a case to Parliament for this. But Parliament obviously then rejected that on the basis that there needed to be wider consultation. They were not closed off to the idea, but they just needed the whole wider consultations. And then budgets have to be looked at because once you get into this thing, you cannot really back off. You need to then be able to support it with the right amounts of budget. So is South Africa ready? I think based on what I've then just presented in terms of having the correct attitude, having the political will, you know. And as you've seen, political parties, for instance, already have been for a while using social media in their election campaigns. So there is some kind of buy-in from them where people can see the benefits. I mean, in 2021, you know, because of lockdowns, then people were confined to their homes, were confined to certain spaces. You had to worry about the health of people. How are people going to behave at voting stations? But then this sort of system, some of these systems, although it's been partially adopted, they were then able to, you know, to facilitate the whole sort of discussion around elections and the whole sort of participation of people in elections just to ensure their safety in terms of their health at the same time.
Right.
So in terms of an African perspective, and as I've said, it varies country by country. But obviously then Africa doesn't exist on its own. It's part of the global existence.
Community.
Community. So I think different countries, different things, because then we also have to look at the kind of governments that are there. We have authoritarian regimes. We have governments that are much more open to democracy or South Africa's and others, you know. It's still a bit of a weighty issue. It also wouldn't make sense to give percentages there, but one can always argue that based on the benefits and the real sort of reasons that we've seen and challenges in the real world, one can always argue that this is for the betterment of democracy. Democracy is in decline. We need to then find ways to strengthen it. We need to find ways to uphold it. And the argument as a cyber optimist that I'm making is that looking at electronic voting as being one of the tools that we can adopt in the future is definitely one of the better ways to strengthen democracy.
Right. As you're saying, and I'm going to disrupt the discussion now, but I was thinking about the fact that most of the voting population right now is made up of the sort of the older generation, particularly in South Africa. And I know that there's a general mistrust of technology, and I think people trust the ballot more than, do I need to do this on a machine? I mean, how do you solve for that? I imagine marketing campaigns are very important and things like that. I think you've said that you need a bigger buy-in and you need a lot more people promoting the idea of e-voting. Given the issue with mistrust, I imagine with older generations, how do you solve for that? And how long does it take to bring people, you know, on your side in as far as like, you can trust the system?
Actually, just to correct you there, South Africa is a huge youth population. So it's not true that a large part of the population is actually older. You know, South Africa is a huge part of the youth population.
But would you say the voting population is much older?
You do have a fair amount of the older population. But the reason why there's this whole fixation on young people is the fact that for democracy to develop, These cannot be ignored, because more and more African countries, we're starting to see an emergence of a younger population that is sort of taking over. So older populations are there. But it doesn't take away from the challenge that you are mentioning, to say that the confusion when one gets into the voter's box when you're voting, it applies to everyone across the board, young people and old people included. Because from a South African perspective, again, we are already seeing a growing ballot paper. I think there's about 50-something parties that are taking part in the election. And on top of those 50-something parties, which is amazing, because that it shows you democracy is at work. But then you also see the addition of independent candidates as well onto that ballot box. So suddenly the confusion becomes too much. You know, we had a system where it was a two-step sort of voting system, you know, where you vote for parties taking part in the National Assembly, and then you're also voting for parties taking part in the province. But now you've got a three-step system with the addition of independent candidates. So I'm already just trying to explain the whole issue of confusion that is already there. So this then is also another argument to say that electronic voting can perhaps help that system in terms of you being able to tailor the voting system to actually suit what you need.
Right.
When you walk in there right now, you're presented with this ballot, you spend time going through, scanning things, it's in alphabetical order, trying to find the party that you're looking for. But if this was tailored because of electronic voting, you're able to do a search, for instance, and find the party that you need. And then in that sense, it becomes easier. But then therefore, that is a challenge for older people, that is a challenge for younger people. It's not necessarily just the older population. So these are some of the issues that need to be looked at sort of closely and discussed further as we wrap up the elections, as it were.
It's going to be an exciting year, I think, for elections on the continent. And I look forward to whatever way we adopt. If we do adopt the electronic voting at some point, I'd love to see, you know, what happens. And I don't know if we've got the percentage. You didn't give us a percentage of how ready we are, but I think you're saying the attitudes are changing. I think that's important. Yeah. So look forward to, you know, when we will get to know electronic voting across the continent. But I want to thank you so much for joining this first episode of season 5 and talk about such an important subject for us this year. Thank you so much, Maxwell.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Stay tuned. We'll be back for part 3 of the podcast. Welcome back to part 3 of today's episode. This part of the podcast we call What in the Civic Tech. Joining me for this segment is Yasmin Shapaji, the project lead for knowledge and network building at the Civic Tech Innovation Network. Before we begin, Yasmin, I want to credit you with the genesis of this segment because it's based on a series of videos you're doing for the Civic Tech Innovation Network. And I want us to talk a little bit about that. And can you at least just give us a little inkling of what the series is about and why it was important for our community in the first place?
Thanks, Nati. Thanks for having me in this segment. So for our Civic Tech Explainer video series, the idea was to create a fun and interesting way to take our community through the different aspects of what Civic Tech is and also cover some key projects and convenings that CTIN is involved with. So we are planning 5 short video series. The first one was already published, and that is What is Civic Tech? To explain the concept of civic technology and how it's applied in Africa. And then we will be going on to looking at the CTIN database, which is a database of civic tech initiatives and case studies on the African continent. And then we will explore the Regional Ambassadors Program, which is one of our key partnerships that we've established with 5 regional civic tech organizations in Africa. And then the fourth video will look at how to use the Civic Tech Evidence Map, which is a research tool that maps the current state of research on civic tech in Africa. And the fifth video will look at our Civic Tech Innovation Forum through the years and some of the key highlights that have come out of the different conferences since we started that conference over 5 years ago that happens annually.
I'm so excited about, you know, the whole series. But today I want us to talk specifically about the one you released last week, focusing on the term civic tech, right? We use it quite frequently, at least in our organization, we use civic tech quite frequently, and it might be a misunderstood term. You've gone out of your way to build this video, you know, talking about what civic tech is. So for people who haven't seen the video, I'd like us to use this opportunity to talk a little bit about what your explanation of civic tech is and why, in the first place, we started defining civic tech and why we thought it was important to do so.
So civic tech is kind of one of those concepts that can be a little bit difficult to define, but we at CTIN do have a specific definition. But maybe I can start with civic tech is short for civic technology, and it involves the use of technology to promote or enhance citizen engagement, participation, and communication, not only with government, but also with public institutions and between citizens. For CTIN specifically, we define civic tech as the appropriate and effective use of digital technologies in connecting government and citizens in public participation, in transparency and accountability, and delivering public services. So in a nutshell, civic tech is kind of a bridge that connects citizens with government by providing empowering platforms and mechanisms by which citizens and community groups can effectively get information that is relevant to them. For example, getting information on public budgets, trying to make the budgeting system more open, or trying to get information during election times to inform citizens to make better decisions in the democratic process. Another component that I think is quite important to mention is that the technology that is used when we talk about civic tech, it can range from lower tech solutions. So those could include SMS or USD applications where people don't necessarily need to have internet connection or data to be able to get information. And then it can go up into like WhatsApp platforms, basic web portals, and then it can also move towards more sophisticated technological systems such as blockchain and artificial intelligence. But specifically in the African context, we find that the appropriate use of tech tend to be the ones that are most accessible. So you see a lot of communities and citizens across the continent making use of existing technologies such as radio, particularly community radio platforms, and also WhatsApp and other social media platforms like Twitter and X and Facebook. And then it's also important to remember that civic tech doesn't happen in a bubble. So there's also a lot of opportunities for community activism and engagement and participation that feeds into making civic tech successful. And overall, that's why we believe that civic tech has a real potential to transform the relationship between citizens and government so that democracy can be more accessible and responsive to citizen needs. And from the civic tech evidence map, we can see, and also from our own research, from documenting civic tech initiatives and case studies, that there is a lot of growth in the civic tech ecosystem in Africa. And that is driven by the need to have these initiatives to address some real life challenges, especially around making democracy more responsive and also holding governments to account.
Right.
This is a challenge that we see globally, but particularly in Africa, we see a lot of civic tech platforms and tools and initiatives that are focused towards making governance better, getting access to data and opening the channel of communication with government and public institutions.
The exciting thing is that there's more videos, and I think that will touch in a little bit on the stuff that you've spoken about, especially the initiatives on the continent that you sort of alluded to, you know, the different types of initiatives. And I always say on this podcast, please go check out our website where we have our database of organizations from across the continent working on different parts of the civic tech space, right? So visit civictech.africa to see all the initiatives that, you know, Yasmin has already sort of alluded to, and also the evidence map that's on our website. So go check out the website, but also check out our YouTube channel to see our latest videos on the explainer series that Yasmin has just spoken about. So if you want a more detailed explanation of what civic tech is, and it's very nice, very entertaining video, So I do say, go watch that on there. And Yasmin, with that, I want us to call the sort of the end to today's episode. And I want to say welcome to everybody who's watching us on YouTube today. Please follow and subscribe. And also don't forget to write comments. If you have any questions for us, please write them on the comment section below. If you want to rate us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, please go ahead. Give us a 5-star rating, please. And we'll see you in the next episode. Thank you so much, Yasmin.
Thanks, Nati.
All right.
Bye.
Goodbye. See you later.